City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten? Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the 3 p.m. time, sir.
Item 672, amend and clarify provisions of the Campaign Finance Fund.
Auditor Blackmer.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of Council. I'm Gary Blackmer, Portland City Auditor, and with me is Jessica Sweeney, one of the principal authors of the report prepared by the Citizen Campaign Commission that proposes a number of code changes to improve the public campaign financing system. Excuse me. And these revisions are based upon the report that was put together by the 7-member commission. And the report was presented, was issued on April 13th and then presented to the council on April 26th. It contains a number of code changes that we thought would be very important in order to improve the system. And the report and the code changes have been available on the auditor's website for a while now. What the commission did, based upon the presentation and discussion with council at the April 26th meeting, was go back, look at their recommendations, and see if they could accommodate many of the issues that were brought up by council. In some cases, they felt like they could better elaborate on their rationale for making the recommendation, but and recognize also that ultimately council makes the final call on these things. And we provided, or the commission worked with my office to put together a document that lays out those issues raised by council, the changes that they made, and additional clarifications. And we also put together a document that matches each of the 28 recommendations put together by the commission to the specific code changes or references to rule changes that we'll be making in order to adapt those recommendations. So this was a major amount of work for this citizen commission, and I really want to extend my appreciation for this great group of thoughtful and dedicated members of the Portland public who produced a really deep and excellent review of our public campaign finance system, and I think are an excellent set of recommendations that we can implement. In addition, I'd also like to recognize Andrew Carlstrom, who's coming up on his one-year anniversary of learning the election system in Portland and the public campaign financing system. He's been a great assistance to the commission, and he had the key role of translating the recommendations in the code with the assistance of Lindley Reese from the city attorney's office. So this is a first reading of the agenda item. It's a non-emergency item and would go to a second reading next week. And ultimately, then, it would take effect on July 13th. So at that point, on July 13th, prospective candidates for city offices would operate under these rules that that you contemplate changing in the code. And we also have an amendment we forgot, an or, in one of our pages, 2.10.080C, which was pointed out to us by Amanda Fritz. So it's a one-word amendment, if you'd be so kind as to incorporate.
What was that section again?
2.10.080C. There was a clause with three phrases in it, and we didn't have, and it was the disposition of the $5 contributions, and we just needed an or before the last one, or after the second one. So it looked like the person had to do all three things with the same $5, as pointed out by Amanda Fritz, and not even I can stretch money that far.
Amanda can do twice as much with $5. Three times.
So if you have any points you'd like to discuss or issues, Jessica's here, I'm here.
I mean, I do want to offer an amendment in a minute, but the independent expenditures issue, you do intend to that issue and come back in the fall with recommendations.
Definitely. And we actually are committing to bring it back. I don't have the date in front of me, but we thought it would be good for the, because of scheduling, to have the commission take a month or two off in the summertime. But September, they would come back and begin work immediately on the independent expenditures and get something to council, certainly before the holidays.
And I appreciate all the feedback you got from us last time and incorporated a lot of that feedback. I guess the one where we're maybe still at odds is the one I did want to offer an amendment, if this is the right time.
I could ask just a few clarifying questions before we do that, to know what's in here and what's not in here. Can you just for my sanity, can you just walk through again how the process would work in just the barest of terms, just for the legislative record with the amendments very quickly?
How the new process for qualifying?
Correct.
Candidates would come in and file a declaration that they want to be a public campaign financing candidate. They would also provide a contribution expenditure report showing what they had, if anything, in terms of campaign funds. Those would be frozen. They would begin the process of collecting their qualifying contributions. The only ones that would count as qualifying contributions are from registered voters in Portland. That, because that is the source that we can use to confirm and validate that these are bona fide contributions based upon the signature that the Multnomah County is willing to work with us on to validate. So it's getting a little ahead. Once they've gotten to the point of having, 30% of their contributions, they need to bring them into us. And they have a limited number of days to do that under this language here. So then that would tend to stagger those contribution qualifying contribution reports coming in to help us from avoiding a big influx at the very end. They would have essentially this year from July 13th until January 31 to get their 1,000 qualified contributions that have been validated.
And if they brought in, let's say, 300 signatures, but you found that 10 of them were, you couldn't verify 10 of them, they have to get the ones that were thrown out in the next phase of the process, they're allowed to do that?
There's no penalties for getting, because it's harder to know if someone's a registered voter or not. We felt like it wouldn't be fair to.
I agree.
So, yeah.
Just trying to make sure that was in there. So thanks.
And once they get the contributions into us, we would validate it, and then we would basically they would sign agreements like they have in the past, saying that they would qualify, or they would comply with all the rules in terms of spending and contributions and reporting. And then actually during this process, they're also using the ORSTAR system to report their contributions. They'll also provide, if that is problematic in any way, they can give us a spreadsheet with the information on it. So then either we would do it directly through ORSTAR so that the public could see who the contributors were, or we would post the spreadsheet so people could see. That would allow for people to be able to challenge a candidate also, because everyone would be able to see who was contributing. If they saw their name there and they knew they hadn't given $5, they could raise that issue. So it provides extra accountability that way. And it also, I think, it creates a little bit more attention to candidates, because people will then be able to track, how many contributing qualifying contributions they've gotten and see what kind of progress they're making. So I think it will help candidates be able to get attention to what they're trying to accomplish and educate the public about what the system is about.
When's the deadline for getting the ultimate deadline after they do the 30%?
January 31 is the ultimate deadline.
The ultimate deadline.
Right.
So the 30% deadline is just whenever they reach it.
Right.
Okay. So it could be the couple of days before January 1, I guess, conceivably.
I think they probably...
a busy couple of days after that, but yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I think to a certain degree, if someone doesn't get their 30% till close to the deadline, they'd probably realize they're not going to make it.
So you then verify the signatures after January 1st. And do they turn in exactly 1,000 or 1,500?
They can turn in more. There's no penalty for doing that. Right. I mean, we don't want them to turn in 6,000 and tell us to find them in it. So to that degree, we don't think it's going to be easy to get 6,000, you know.
There's no maximum of $5
contributors. No, no. And in fact, one of the features in here that we provided was that if candidates want to continue gathering $5, they can actually have it put directly into the campaign finance fund rather than their own. So it can be a means of organizing.
When did they start getting money then?
Right after we validate that they've met the threshold.
They get how much?
They get, depending on the dates, they get about a third if it's relatively early on, and then they get the two-thirds. I'd have to look and see. I think it's in early March.
And then the prohibited expenses, because we had some, I guess, probably maybe some additional discussion today under what's in the piece of paper before us. What are some of the changes on what cannot be used?
We have prohibited, we had a number of areas. For example, legal fees, we deemed that would not be appropriate for spending. That campaign parties, the election night parties.
What page is that on?
Is it 19?
I'm working off my memory. There's
it's recommendation 19.
Ah, okay.
Page 19.
18 and 19.
18 and 19. Limitations on use of qualifying contributions.
And prohibited uses.
Okay, and
right, so our sense, in watching what was happening with the funds, we thought it would be appropriate to put some more limits on there. So, for example, we also set an accountant or other professional service fees in conjunction with arguing against penalties or decertification.
So you pay those out of your pocket?
Right.
So one way to defeat a candidate is to sue the hell out of them?
No, this is if they're appealing a...
penalties.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. And did Commissioner Salt?
I'm amazed how fast you came up with that devious scheme.
So Commissioner Saltzman's argument ruled the day in your mind on number 8, so we can't buy fuel?
No, mileage would be permissible, but
okay.
Leasing a vehicle would not.
So I must be, it's a long day for me. So it says number 8, under the limitations, it says certain vehicle-related expenses, including purchases, leases, rentals, repairs, or fuel,
would be prohibited.
Would be, but mileage would be okay.
Got it. You just keep mileage.
Right.
Does that mean if one did not own a car and had legitimate campaign business that required a car, they could rent a car themselves and reimburse themselves for just the campaign mileage?
They could. I mean, our sense was...
Amanda raised the issue in an email that I think I got, probably some other people got, that actually kind of discriminates against somebody who's not a car owner. So, like, let's say you didn't own a car and you used Flex Car, you couldn't reimburse yourself, but you could reimburse yourself for miles traveled in a vehicle you owned. Is that right?
Well, you could reimburse yourself for miles traveled in a Flex Car.
Okay, so you could.
But I'm not sure how close those would match up. But, yeah, we were trying to accommodate the issue of not leasing or renting, just because, you know, we understood Commissioner Saltzman's concerns that we're, in order to limit the vehicle usage just to campaign activities,
right,
mileage seemed to be the best way to do that, as opposed to, you know, a leasing or a renting where it can be used for many other non-campaign activities, and it's not an easy thing to track.
And this you know, admittedly is a hypothetical. Some might have different opinions about Amanda's car, but she does have one. Is there any provision, and I don't know if this is a good idea, I'm thinking out loud, I haven't thought this through. I mean, would there be any provision where the commission could hear a request for an exception on something like this? I'm just trying to get at some way of saying, I mean, I get the idea. You don't want somebody to lease a car with campaign funds, but I also think that if somebody legitimately does not own a car, that's a legitimate, that doesn't make their need any less legitimate than somebody who does and then pays themselves mileage.
Yeah, we don't have any kind of a clause that says unless.
Nothing, yeah. So, and those are dangerous. I'm not necessarily saying we should.
I mean, the other option would be to move it from the code to the rules, and that could be, that gives my office more flexibility and interpretation, but I guess.
I think we want to get all this stuff right. I do actually believe that anybody who's seriously in together enough to qualify under this campaign and is a serious candidate to win this is probably capable of figuring out how to, you know, borrow a car for the cost of mileage from a campaign support or do something that works under this. I mean, I'd be surprised if somebody who can navigate this far into the system can't figure out. I just want to be fair. All right, well, I'm sure we'll hear testimony on this.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask one other question too. One of the issues we talked about last time was in order for more quicker recovery of funds in case of fraud or abuse, mm-hmm. that you become a co-signer of the account. And I remember the response was the city attorneys thought that put us on the line.
The only way for us to do that would be two people on the account, the city of Portland and the candidate, in which case if the candidate started bouncing checks, the city could be liable for repaying that. So the attorneys went through a bunch of different options, and they really didn't come up with any simple, straightforward way of doing it. They didn't even come up with a complicated way of doing it. It would have required us negotiating agreements with any bank that a candidate might have chosen to have an account in to see if they could set up some procedures to give us some guarantee, but it was a difficult kind of a system to set up.
Okay. Should I put my amendment out there now for testimony? And
yes, go ahead.
If it even gets seconded, but I'm still hung up on the issue that of public funds being used to hire family members. And mm-hmm. So my amendment would actually add that to the list of prohibited or limitations on the use of public funds. So it would say that basically it would add a number 11. We're looking at page 19 that would say basically that the limitation is public funds could not be used for salary or payment to a family member. And then my amendment also then goes on to define family member. Family member means any of the following persons: the candidate's spouse, domestic partner, parent, grandparent, child, grandchild, sibling, aunt, uncle, niece, nephew, stepchild, stepbrother, stepsister, stepparents, stepgrandparents, daughter-in-law, son-in-law, sister-in-law, brother-in-law, mother-in-law, father-in-law, grandparents-in-law, and equivalent relatives of the candidate's domestic partner. And the reason I'm, still hung up on this is I do think we certainly had a situation in the first debut of public financing where there was questionable payments made by a candidate to a relative. And I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that this is absolutely, this public financing will be voted on in 2010. I don't think really that we can afford to suffer another situation where mm-hmm. the funds look may not in fact be an abuse, but certainly looks to the public like questionable. And I think the area where this is most likely to happen is in the employment or paying salary to relatives. So I think we should err on the side of absolutely being above board. I think, most of us who've been in campaigns, most people who've been in campaigns know that family members don't need to be paid to do the job. They're going to get out there and work for you. And I know that last time there was discussion, legislators are allowed to hire spouses. I would point out there's been many examples where legislators have abused their office budgets. Most recently, Representative Kelly Worth, who resigned and in the process of resigning, I think allocated some $40,000 to her mother. So I think that, you know, the legislature is not the model that we should be looking at here. We should be looking at establishing our own above reproach position on this and absolutely limit it. And just I think that will serve us well in the long run.
You know, my sense in the discussions that the commission had, they recognized the viewpoint and, you know, they were more than happy to defer to council in terms of how you ultimately came down on it. I just had one question of clarification. Paying the relative could be paid for expenses, like mileage or things like that?
This is only for salary or
okay.
payment in the terms of payment for services, yes.
Okay.
Can you, and refresh memory, can you pay yourself as a candidate? Just out of curiosity.
No, I don't. I think state law rules on that. No?
No.
No.
Not on the state.
Not on the state.
Yeah, on the state. Maybe that's federal, sorry.
I don't know. You could be right.
But on this, we cannot.
Right.
Okay.
You know, you may want to clarify the payment issue.
Yeah.
That's pretty general, and I just heard a.
Okay. Well, if there's a second for it, I'll make sure it's clarified. If there's no second, then that's the end of the
second.
Debate. Second, okay.
Would you accept a friendly amendment, Commissioner? You're missing some hyphens under brother-in-law and grandparents-in-law, which could render this legislatively confusing.
Okay. So I would add the hyphens in the right places, and I would clarify that used for salary or...
Would you consider after payment, comma, other than legitimate reimbursable expense or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I'd look to you guys for the...
Allowable reimbursable expense.
Yeah. Because it's C, prohibited uses, so that would say other than...
Other than allowable reimbursement.
Sure. We can certainly enforce something like that.
Okay.
I mean, we may not know someone, you know, an in-law under another name. We'd have to depend upon members of the public to tell us. You could add on the and former any of the above.
Well, so I guess it would say used for salary or payment other than reimbursable expenses to a family member. And then I would add the hyphens in the right place. So that would be the amendment and I'm perfectly happy if we want to take testimony on it before we vote.
Anything else? Let's go ahead and take testimony. Who's signed up?
We have four people signed up. Carol Cushman, Amanda Fritz, and James Lee. James Lee.
Cushman representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League continues to support the Campaign Finance Fund, including the proposed amendments which clarify the original goals. I'm not going to comment on the fresh amendment today because the League process would say I would need to check with a few more people than just my commenting on that without having prior checking in. We encourage you to support the Portland system of public campaign finance. Tightening the signature gathering requirement with the restrictions that a contributor is a city elector rather than a city resident narrows the pool of possible contributors. One of the goals, however, was to broaden participation in the democratic process and asking that the contributors are also eligible to vote in the following election is consistent with that goal. Establishing a timeline which verifies that the contributor is an elector after submission of signatures does allow for active voter registration to accompany the signature collection. We're also encouraged to see that there's a process for invalid contributions which were collected in good faith. While not counting toward the total required for certification, these invalid contributors will eliminate
Pardon me, I just messed that sentence up. Let me start over. We don't want invalid contributions to eliminate otherwise qualified candidates, and we're concerned that using registration files could inadvertently mean you would have invalid signatures. And so we're glad that you're allowing the process for that to go through. Also, thank you for addressing the League's concern regarding early submission of qualifying contributions. The artificial December deadline may have excluded excellent and viable candidates. We appreciate the auditor's concern about workload caused by signature verification through voter registration records. The approach outlined in the proposed code language is a good solution. It should help alleviate the workload problems and at the same time allow candidates to gather support at their own pace. Please consider the need sooner rather than later for rules for special elections with their compressed timeline. And it continues to be the hope of the League of Women Voters of Portland that the current council will support the spirit of the campaign finance fund through the actions of your individual campaigns. Thank you.
I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. I support most of the changes proposed. One of the purposes of this system is to help people who don't have a lot of personal funds or a lot of affluent friends to run and succeed in a bid for Portland City Council. So the proposal to prohibit use of public money for vehicle rental is unfair and should be deleted. I was astonished to hear the suggestion that the reason for that prohibition is so that there would be no opportunity to use the vehicle for non-campaign purposes. I don't think I did anything non-campaign purposeful for about 6 months. So I would suggest that certainly we don't want people buying a car, but there are legitimate needs both for the candidate, him or herself, and for campaign staff that you might need to hire a bus or other vehicle, and that vehicle rental should be an allowable expense. And so I ask you to change that prohibition. I also support Commissioner Saltzman's amendment for prohibiting family members from benefiting from the campaign. There's another concern that I want to raise. My understanding of the code language saying that the contributor information will be posted on the internet is that it will link to the state system of the ORSTAR, which gives name and address of the contributor. I believe we need to have administrative rules that protect our donors so that their signatures are not posted on the internet. I think in these days of identity theft and fraud, that asking sometimes elderly people to have their personal information posted on the internet is extremely dangerous. And we not only want to protect public money, we want to protect these good people who are trying to do a good public purpose. And so I would ask that as we move forward with the administrative rules, that there's certainly a way for people to go to the auditor's office to view the signatures, but that there would not be the capacity to post them on the internet. My understanding is that voter registration signatures are not available as public record. So I would ask that you make very certain that that doesn't happen with this system. And finally, please commend the Citizens Campaign Commission for this great work that they've done and ask them to start work immediately on rules for special elections. This system will be most important when there is a quick election in a special election, and you could not collect. The timeline is all set up for the primary election of the even years. You couldn't collect 1,000 signatures in 3 months, even if there were a timeline. So I would ask that once you've given the commission just a little break, that immediately, in addition to the independent expenditure rules, that they work on rules for a special election so that that's there in the code. Thank you.
My name is James Lee. I reside on Southeast Mitchell Street. Thank you for hearing me today. I'm speaking solely for myself. I own two bicycles, one bus pass, and no car. And if I were running for the City of Portland office, I would consider my membership in the car sharing to be a vital resource and certainly a legitimate expense. I'd like to point out, as far as the language is concerned, however, that FlexCar does not work on mileage, they work on time. and there are a variety of plans that you can use for that. So I suggest that the language be amended that to include the other forms of rental. I would also like to point out that FlexCar provides really excellent record keeping, so there could be really very little question whether something was legitimate or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our last person is Janice Thompson.
Good afternoon, Janice Thompson. Democracy Reform Oregon is now our official name. I think last time I was here, we were about to change it, but we have now. So thanks again for the commission and the work of the auditor's office and on preparing this, you know, the report and this the resulting set of code changes. Overall, really very much in support. I only want to touch on some of the topics that have come up and try to help shed some light. One, Commissioner Adams, you mentioned you had some concerns about, like, you know, this whole legal issue and what funds could be used for or not in terms of if there were legal issues that were kind of came up in terms of, like, the restrictions on use of campaign funds for legal fees.
No, it was explained to me.
Okay. All right. Well, in addition to being totally satisfied, I think that just an FYI is that state law looks like it's going to be changed to have the option for public officials to set up a legal defense fund if something came up. So I think there would be a whole nother angle that could help in this situation, dovetailing with the ordinance changes written. Exactly. You know, I support the amendments related to family members. I guess I will just note for the record that part of the reason that the campaign commission, I think, you know, didn't go to where Commissioner Saltzman is because there had been some indication from staff that there were legal problems with going there, and evidently those aren't the case. Another clarification in terms of this whole use, you know, paying oneself, state law actually was changed in 2005. So that candidates under state law, which would apply in this case, cannot pay for themselves for campaign services. So that's, again, just kind of a little FYI in terms of how this dovetails, and I think we've recovered there. In terms of the signatures, ORSTAR is not set up to take any signatures. I think the ORSTAR system is just for the campaign finance reporting. So I think the signature protection issue is also already covered there. Finally, do agree that the next steps are to take a look at special elections and the independent expenditures issues, and I'm very committed to work with the commission on those points over the summer and fall.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, I think Mr. Lee left, but I thought he did have a good point about flex cars compensation being based on time rather than mileage, and I thought we would suggest the word for time or mileage reimbursements to reflect that. To number 8 limitation.
Well, the only thing I'd point out is that if you used a flex car and you were paying for time, you would still get reimbursed for the mileage.
And just making sure the rate is fair for flex car.
Well, I mean, if you just say for time, what is the rate? I mean, that could be anything, couldn't it?
Would there be any way technically to get to come up with something that would allow reimbursing flex car? So then you'd actually literally have a, or if another competitor came up, something like, I mean, if that option, if it was clearly that it was a legal use to pay yourself back for using flex car, I think that does distinguish from.
Yeah. What I'm saying is if you're driving a flex car and paying by the hour and you drive 10 miles, you have the ability still to submit for a refund based on 10 miles.
But because of the nature of the business, it costs you more than you get in mileage is what they're getting at.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Because you buy a membership and you get so many hours a month based on your level of membership.
It might be
in general, I think flex car per mile costs generally more, but it's way cheaper for people because by definition you drive way less. You know, if you have a car, you tend to drive a lot more than if you're using flex car. And so I'm not explaining this very well, but
no, I hear
mile
you.
For mile, you spend a little bit more on flex car than you do, than a reimbursement rate is on a typical.
Does the reimbursement rate normally cover the cost of a standard rental vehicle?
Well, you use the set government mileage rate, right?
Yeah, it'd be more like
the IRS,
what is it, about 50 or 55 cents right now, I think is.
And how does that stack up if you rent a vehicle?
If you're doing 10 miles, you'd get $5.50 back, and yeah. Even a flex car would be like minimum $7 for an hour.
Yeah.
Or if it was 2 hours, if you're going to a meeting, you'd be paying a lot more. So
we could have some language then that recognized the unique arrangement of a flex car.
Yeah, it's not a lease, but it is kind of a rental. So I guess Commissioner Salzman had the principal concerns around it, and I'm not sure if you would accept short-term rental is okay, but leases are not. But then we'd have to somehow define hourly rentals.
Well, you know, my concern is certainly not to deprive people of access to flex cars, mileage reimbursements. You know, my concern is somebody leasing a convertible BMW because they think they need that for all the parades and things like that they're going to be in. That's, you know, I'm coming at it from that end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to be able to, you know, accommodate the flex car use and mm-hmm. and reasonable short-term rentals. And if there's something we could come up with between now and the second reading.
I think we could. I mean, it kind of comes down to the intent. As we discuss this, I think we can come up with some language that it'll be.
Just as one vote, I mean, I'm fine with having this worked out in administrative rules. You know what our legislative direction is if you want to not have to read this yet again.
But yeah, I'm fine with that, too.
Okay.
I don't know what you do to the ordinance to amend it so we can do that, but.
Develop rules for the reimbursement of automobile use.
If we could maybe put together some language real quick, we could.
About that, just develop rules. The auditor's office will develop rules for the reimbursement of automobile use strictly for campaign purposes.
Okay. Works for us.
Is there a second?
Second.
Call the roll.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Gotcha on that one, didn't I?
So I'd like to vote on the family members as amended.
So we'll vote on the amendment proposed by Commissioner Salzman. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Further discussion on the ordinance.
Well, this first reading, right?
Yes.
So I just want to, take Amanda's suggestion to heart to thank the campaign commission for all their work.
Very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Done a lot of work, and we'll be relying on you to do a lot more work. So, but have a good summer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There's nothing else. This will pass to second reading. When does it hurt again, Carla?
That will come back to June 13th in the morning session.
June 13th at 9:30 a.m. There's nothing else. The council stands adjourned. Thank you.
All right.